Now, as I said in our annual meeting, I want to continue the dwelling in the word that we were doing regarding the little bit of Mark's gospel just before this, as we move on to today's gospel. And we're not going to be doing dwelling in the word in the way we were there. We're going to be having a bit more of an open discussion and I hope a Bible study so that we can all be thinking and studying and praying with this passage together. And just in case you were thinking about your lunch or your shopping list or what else is going on during the rest of the day, I'm going to read this passage again slowly so that we can really notice things in it. And do try to actively listen and read from your bulletin as I read this passage for us. Jesus and the disciples went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What are you teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. And as we begin, just a reminder about the context for this passage. Just before this, we have had the call of those first disciples, of who became Peter, Simon and Andrew, and James and John. So rather than having all 12 disciples, this is a bit like having half of the Beatles. Jesus has started to gather his team. Now, where would most of us start if we are organising a group of people? And of course, this is not just any group of people, this is the group that leads to the whole of our faith. Well, we might sit down perhaps and plan a strategy, but Jesus instead immediately goes and gets to work. He gets to work teaching and healing. And I think it's very easy in this passage for us to perhaps get a little bogged down with what we think about demon possession, which most of us perhaps find rather difficult. And I kind of want us to move beyond that, because there's so much we could say about that. Because he's simply getting to work teaching and healing. And one thing we touched on downstairs was the nature of Jesus' authority. When he says, "Follow me," and the fishermen immediately follow him. What is it about Jesus? And here we've got the word authority used twice. At the start of the passage, if you look at your bulletins again, they were astounded at his teaching. We're not told what he taught, what words he used, or even what he spoke about. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority. And then again, towards the end of our passage, after he's healed this man after the demon has been thrown out of him. What is this? A new teaching with authority. And I wonder, what kind of authority do you think Jesus had? What is it they're talking about? It? What is it they noticed? What is it they saw in Jesus? What is it they heard? Just use your imagination a bit, really, to imagine yourself in this synagogue. We're not even told he was invited to teach. Imagine if someone came in here without being invited and simply started to teach. What is it that made them listen and respond to him? Any ideas? Chris?
I'm guessing he had a lot of charisma.
What do you mean by charisma? What does that word mean?
If people just start listening to him by his speaking, he commands a presence just by walking into a place. So by speaking with authority, he's got charisma to draw attention to himself and to what he's saying.
And when we find someone like that with presence, what is it about someone that makes us listen?
I'm not sure.
We may have to hope someone else can answer that. Harry, yes. Sorry, we've got this slightly difficult microphone to use.
I think he saw something in the man who was afflicted by the demon. So he gained authority from what he saw. And it was not that that was the essence of the man, but that he was captured, he was driven by a spirit that needed to be pulled out of him. And that was something.
Thank you, Harry. Any other thoughts? Christian. Hang on a moment for the microphone.
That he had love, that's why they believed him.
He had love. That's a really brilliant answer. Because I think the kind of thing that Chris was talking about, we kind of know authority, don't we, when we find it, which is why it's quite hard to put a finger on. Part of it might be confidence in the person that is speaking. But actually, I hadn't thought of that answer, Christian. But when we see someone who is loving, particularly in the church, maybe that does help us to listen to a person, even if they don't have the other things that we might think are authoritative in the rest of our life, not the kind of things that we might, you know, find in a politician that has authority, for example. If we find someone who might even be nervous but is loving in the church, we certainly should be listening to those people. Any other thoughts on what gives Jesus authority in this passage? Just imagining it. Behind me, Elaine.
I think he had authority when he spoke, but I also think the people knew he cared about them, that it wasn't about him.
Thank you, Elaine. And again, that's something that is quite hard to put your finger on, isn't it? But they form a judgment about Jesus very, very quickly, just as Simon and Andrew and James and John did. There's something, it can't just be in his words, there's something in him. I often imagine Jesus' eyes. We're never told about Jesus' eyes. But whenever we're told about the way he speaks to people, I think there must have been something incredible in the way he gave attention and the way his love, I think, was shown in his eyes. Any other thoughts before we move on from this? Mari, yeah. Mari and Joan. I'll go to Joan first.
I just think confidence. You know, we as humans tend to worry about what other people think about us. Mm. And I think Jesus didn't care what other people thought. He knew who he was and didn't have to play that game that we as humans play.
Thank you. Yeah, not maybe having that kind of surface personality that he had to project, but just being himself.
Similarly, I think he had authenticity, that people could discern that he really meant what he said, that there wasn't a gap between his words and his actions, that they felt the genuineness of his presence.
Thank you, Murray. And Elaine.
I think also that people were feeling something inside themselves when they heard the words and when they saw what he was doing. He didn't just talk, he did things, he healed people, and people felt themselves responding, yes, that's right.
And actually, Elaine, following on from that, could I ask you another question?
Yes.
Talking about the response to Jesus, we've spoken a bit about his authority. How do you think we respond to Jesus here at St. Matthew's in that way, the way you're talking about?
By what we do.
And what do we do? Can you just give a few examples?
We love each other. We respond when people say children need winter clothes, and we get them. When people say that children are sleeping outside, we say, that's wrong. Now, how can I help?
Thank you, Elaine. And there are so many ways we do that here with our work in the community, our work feeding people, all of these ways we respond to Jesus. And what I want us to think a little bit about today, I'll come back to you, Kathy. What I want to think a little bit about today is how those things we do to serve others are related to how we respond to Jesus. It's quite a difficult question. Lots of us might just say, well, we serve because we think that's important. because we see that there's a need and therefore we serve. But I want to just think a little bit about how that is part of our response to Jesus, what it is about Jesus and that authority we've just spoken about that makes us respond to him. It may be, Cathy, you were going to help answer that question. What were you going to say, Cathy?
I was going to mention his compassion, which probably showed in his eyes and what he said.
Do you want to say a bit more? What is that compassion? What is compassion, do you think?
Love.
Love.
And care for other people.
Thank you. And that question of how we respond, has anyone got any thoughts on that? How our response to Jesus leads to our service? And our service at St. Matthew's out in the world. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I was wondering if Jesus' teaching of love, love ourselves, love our neighbors, is different from what the other religions teach. And was that unique? That's what I was wondering.
Thank you, Abby. Any other thoughts? Yeah. If you can manage with this.
Sorry. in regards to service, it's acting in imitation of Christ.
Acting in imitation of Christ. Thank you.
I think when someone loves you, it allows you to love others. And when someone has compassion towards you, it allows you to have compassion towards others. So that's how we respond to Jesus in this church or in our lives.
Thank you. So many good answers there. I think there are so, if we really dwell with this passage, there's the model of Jesus, and we see what he's doing, as well as just his physical presence. And we can see the way his physical presence has led the disciples to respond, and they immediately go out and join him in this teaching and in this healing ministry. And there are some other words I'd like us to just think about a little bit. And these are the words that the demon, or the man with the demon, says. It's easy to overlook these words because we don't necessarily think this is going to be part of the teaching. He cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth?" Really important words, because the man with the demon and the demons recognize who Jesus is, the Holy One of God. So they understand what's happening. They get the truth of who Jesus is. And that question, "What have you to do with us?" is a question I would like us to really think about as individuals and as a community. Because I think that on the question of how we serve the wider community, of how we serve God, comes out of that question. And that's not a question I want to give you an answer for today. I want us to really think about what Jesus is doing here and how he serves, how he heals, how he teaches. And then ask yourself, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? And that question will mean different things to each of us, just as all of our answers together will help to shape who we are as a community. And later this year, I'd like us to do some thinking together about what our priorities are as a community and where Jesus is calling us to be. But I think the answers to those questions can only come out of this question that the man who's possessed asks. And so rather than leaving you with some answers here, I would like us to spend a few minutes, which will seem quite a long time, in silent prayer with this question. What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? And now, as we go into that time of prayer, this might seem a strange place to leave us as we finish with this passage. I would just like us to spend a few minutes, each of you, and you can simply repeat these words. This isn't an intellectual question. This is a question of what might rise up in your heart, within your soul, as each of us addresses that question. What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth. What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? And please do continue to ponder those words in your heart, particularly as we approach a time of discernment as a community. What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth?